1. The crowd in the T-Bahn jockeys for position as the train approaches the station. Bodies press against me from all sides. Elbows and luggage corners indistinguishable and equally painful. Fortunately, I am tall. Otherwise, this mass of people would have me reduced to a claustrophobic breakdown. Kind of ironic that a trip to the planet would cause a station dweller like me to feel closed in. I stretch my neck, tilting my nose up to search for slightly less funky air above most of the crowd. The train stops, and the masses push against the doors, shoving me forward. As the doors slide open, the crowd surges, and I imagine the first few people popping out like corks from a champagne bottle. Nearly hysterical giggles bubble up through my throat, and I clamp down. Breathe deep. Only a few more minutes. The crowd carries me along as I clutch my duffel tightly to my chest for fear it will be ripped away. As we plunge across the station toward the slide ramps, I try to maneuver to the edge of the throng, but I am trapped by a large woman with a face set like iron, wielding a massive luggage float. Her multiple offspring march quickly behind, grimly clinging to the float in a line. All but the last one, a little girl of about 5. She skips along at the end of the line of children, singing quietly, her eyes alight as she tries to see everything. The woman barks something over her shoulder, and the little girl drops her head, slumping into the required trudge behind her siblings. After a second, she peeks up, eyes still bright, and the bounce creeps back into her step. I catch her eye and wink. She grins back, then dips her head before the woman notices. A shriek rings out over the crowd. Heads swivel wildly, looking for the source. A hand points upward. There! We all stop to look. Along the left wall, a pair of float tubes stretch up the wall and into the ceiling. Halfway up, a woman bobs in the tube, slowly rotating as she screams. The sound wavers in time to her spin, sounding like some kind of emergency siren. The little girl next to me giggles and claps a hand over her mouth. She glances up at me, and I make a face. Her shoulders shake with suppressed laughter. Stupid tourists, a man on my other side mutters to his companion. Everyone knows the float tubes have been flaking out for weeks. Better to take the slider. He grasps his friend's elbow and steers him to the right, ignoring the trapped woman. After a glance at the screamer, most of the crowd follows suit. My little friend watches over her shoulder as her family hauls her away. A group of people dressed in beige coveralls plows through the crowd like a ship through waves. As the rest of the travelers stream away from the tubes, the team sets up a rescue trampoline and a crawler bot. Their moves are practiced and their faces are weary, as if they've done this before many times. I give a mental shrug and leave them to it. The crowd bottlenecks against the slide ramp entrance, and I squirm between bodies to the edge of the room. A tiny gap opens up, and I dart between two business suits talking loudly into their holophones. Suddenly, I'm at the front of the group, and I dash onto the miraculously open ramp, just ahead of the older couple whose slow progress clearly annoys the entire crowd. The slide ramp is mercifully quiet as it angles up toward the surface. The vid feed covering the walls shows happy, wealthy people enjoying a sun-filled day on Kaku. Tiny letters across the bottom of the hollow give the real news. Employment is down, erratic weather has caused crops to fail, and a suicide bomber took out a small store in Frobisher Cove. The happy people party on, carefree. I step out into a transit station. The trickle of people exiting the tubes feels so much less frantic than the crowd downstairs. Many of them peel off to other tubes that lead to connecting trains. Ahead, glass doors reveal a wide, green lawn, and a sign over the door reads, Turing Sassoon Technology Institute of Aesthetics and Computing, Kaku. I walk out of the transit station, sucking in the flower-scented air. The famous Kaku tea cherry trees are in full blossom, clouds of brilliant orange color shading every walkway. A fountain burbles somewhere nearby but out of sight. Students whiz by on hover cycles, stroll together through the quad, and nap on the grass while the sun beats down. The campus relations folks should be out here filming for their VR tours. They'll never get a more perfect day. A woman about my age, with a pert, lightly freckled nose, a slim build, and the most gorgeous burnished copper hair I've ever seen, smiles at me. How does she get her hair so straight? I self-consciously push my own flaming, frizzy corkscrews out of my eyes. Hi, I'm Lindsay. Welcome to TSTI. Are you here for the admissions rodeo? She chirps. She cocks her head and scrolls through a list on her holo. No, I answer, hiking my bulging bag up on my shoulder. Refresher course. Com 453. I know where to go. Her smile dims a little, and I wonder if her performance rating is based on the number of students she helps. I'm supposed to meet a friend here, though, I say. Can you tell me where Willoughby Hall is? I think it's new. Of course! The grin amps back up as she spins around, her copper locks flaring out around her head and settling back into a perfect cascade. She points across the lawn toward a distant lavender building.
Across the quad, past Lubric Center. That's the purple one. Then the second drop shaft on the right!
Spinning back, she flicks a code slip at me.
There's a guide! Have a wonderful day!
I mumble my thanks, but she's already moved on to the boy who followed me out of the station. I settle my bag more securely on my shoulder and start across the quad. The guide she flipped to me vibrates my hollow ring, so it feels like someone pulling on my hand, leading me toward my destination. I walk and walk, my legs feeling like rubber. Living on a space station does not prepare one for a massive campus like the Technoinst. When I was working on my certification, I thought nothing of flitting across campus several times a day. Now, I am daydreaming about a hover cart with air conditioning. I don't remember it being this hot and muggy. A group rushes by, all bare legs and hairy arms, rev balls flying between them as they shout and laugh. More students surge up behind them, headed in the direction of the sports fields. They must have just finished their exams. Rev ball is a finals week tradition. I duck under a huge tree to avoid being swept away by the tide. The blossom-heavy branches droop down, creating a hidden refuge. During the term, these living domes are usually occupied by studying or amorous students. Today, this one is a solitary refuge. I sit on the ground, lean against the tree trunk, and enjoy the shade. The drone of insects buzzing around the tea cherry flowers lulls me, and I close my eyes, breathing in the heavy, sweet scent. An angry whisper rouses me.
You need to make sure they don't get suspicious.
A higher voice responds.
What do you think I've been trying to do? But some of those idiots just won't keep their mouths shut. You should take care of that.
The first voice is cold.
I will have them eliminated if necessary.
What?
The second voice squeaks mid-word. Eliminated? You mean, don't do anything,
The voice trails off. Something about that voice rings a bell in my head, but I can't think what. Looking out from under the branches, I can see two pairs of feet in the same sports shoes every other student wears. The thick flowers and foliage hide their faces from me. The first voice speaks again, deadly intent obvious beneath the casual tone.
I'll do whatever needs to be done to protect my project. If that bothers you, then you should make sure I don't have to eliminate any problems.
My breath catches in my throat. I have no idea who this guy is, but he is seriously frightening. The second guy gulps so loudly I can actually hear it.
Don't worry, I'll keep everyone quiet until after the event.
The two men move away, and I stay in my safe little flower dome. I'm not relaxed anymore. In fact, I'm cold and sweaty at the same time. I hug my knees to my chest. The first guy sounded so dangerous, so unconcerned about doing violence. And he could be anyone. I have no idea what he looks like. I might have a class with him, and I'll never know unless I hear him whisper. I sit a while longer, breathing deeply, trying to slow my heart rate. Maybe they were just practicing lines of a play, or reciting a favorite movie. My friend Jared and I used to do that all the time when we were kids. We were addicted to ancient TV. Okay, I still am. And we loved to try to outdo each other with obscure quotes. Those two guys must have been quoting a vid, I don't know. Or maybe I completely misread the level of menace in the first guy's voice. Maybe he has a class project that's going really well and he's afraid someone is going to steal his idea or spill the beans to his classmates. Some of those marketing classes are fiercely competitive. That must be it. I totally misconstrued the whole thing. I shake my head, amazed at my own ability to overdramatize a snippet of conversation. I'm going to blame that on Bobby Putin. Before he nearly killed me, I would never have overreacted like that. Calm again, I climb out from beneath the tree and resume my trek across campus. I finally reach the hideous Lubric Center, a massive wedding cake of a building in clashing shades of purple, lavender, and maroon. Student rumors claim it was designed by a failed architecture student who was a member of the wealthy Lubric family. I drop down onto the wide front steps, ignoring the continued pull of my hollow ring. I'm not really winded, but I haven't been dirtside in a long time. The buildings and trees break up any long vistas, and I'm not prone to agoraphobia like many station dwellers. But there's just so much space. And not the black, no-one-can-hear-you-scream kind, but an endless stretch of violet-blue sky and huge expanses of green, unbroken by bulkheads, airlocks, and thick plexiglass windows. I breathe deep and try to relax. The sun presses on me like a blanket. That's another difference. At home, the temperature is set at a constant 20 degrees Celsius. Only ancient and ultra-wealthy Don Huatang has the ability to crank it up or down. His compartment is sweltering. I close my eyes and rotate my neck and shoulders. Now that I'm no longer hauling a heavy bag across the endless quad, the heat feels good. Tree! I look up to find my best friend and roommate, Kara Ortega Okilo, standing at the foot of the stairs. As always, she looks fabulous. Today, her skin is a pale, creamy tan, and her hair is blonde and sticks straight. Her eyes are green and fringed by impossibly long, dark lashes, and a wide stripe of glittering black eyeliner. She's wearing a gauzy, sleeveless mini-dress that shows off her legs and looks like it would fly away in a stiff breeze. Her purple stiletto sandals make her about 10 centimeters taller than usual. You look amazing, I say, rising from the step. I mean, even more amazing than usual. The green eyes are new. She smiles. I'm learning eye color mods in class. Did this one myself. She flutters her preposterous lashes at me, and I laugh. Your class sounds like a lot more fun than mine is going to be, I reply, hefting my bag. She throws her arms around me with a squeal. I've missed you so much. My class is filled with really great people, but there's no one like Triana Moore. I can't wait to introduce you to all my new friends. She drags me around the purple monstrosity toward a glass and metal fence enclosing a lush garden. Trees and vines spill over the fence, almost hiding it behind a riot of green. We walk down a smooth sidewalk to an open arch and step through. About 4 meters in, the garden opens and the ground drops away, leaving us on a small, railed platform in the center of a large, open, rectangular shaft. 10 levels of balconies stack down to a brightly painted plascrete floor. Doors open off the balconies. I count about 20 per floor. A plaque on the railing reads, Willoughby Hall. Built in memory of Creighton Willoughby Thompson, Alcien Bis Yuen. Here's the student res, Kara says, leading me to the float tube on the left side of the platform. We call it Creighton's Crack. We're on level 8, close enough to the top to get some sun in the morning. Hanging plants drip off the first 2 levels. But everything below that is bare. Far below us, deep in the shadows, a hand-painted banner proclaims, Peace at any cost. You're not worried about the float tubes? I ask. A woman got hung up in the one at the station. Kara laughs and waves a hand. Student prank. The freshman coding class has been hitting it every week or so, I've heard. Campus safety beefed up the security on the internal systems. We drop 2 floors and step out into a party. Kara! Voices cry, but Kara laughs and waves them off, weaving through the mass of bodies. She flings a few names at me as she exchanges greetings, promising to come back later. That's the party crew, Kara tells me, as if it weren't obvious. We walk around the balcony to a door opposite the float tubes. The carpet shows wear in the high traffic areas, and the plastic furniture scattered in the corner study pods looks like it came from a much older building. And this is our temporary home. She waves her hollow ring, and the lock clicks. She swings the door open. Hard to believe it's only 2 years old. I follow her into a bland beige room with 2 worn desks, 2 narrow beds, and a nappy brown carpet. A window in the wall by the door looks back out onto the balcony. A door in the opposite wall hangs ajar, revealing a minimalist bathroom. I try not to look too closely at the stain on the wall. Student housing at its finest. Kara fluffs her hair in the bathroom mirror, making eye contact with me in the reflection. Get yourself unpacked, and let's go join the party.